you have your card.
Now, does everybody have a packet? Everybody will need a packet. If you want to choose your own color, I don't want to be discriminating.
Anybody need one?
I was actually a little surprised that the orange ones got picked up. Being in Norman, this is a cross-cultural experience. But at least it's not burnt orange, so it's all right. Yeah. By the very nature of this, it's pretty heavy stuff. And yet, what we are talking about today, ministering to those in grief, is one of the most obvious opportunities that we have to demonstrate Christ-like compassion that we will ever find. Now, a lot of people are not comfortable in approaching this subject. However, we should be, because we have an opportunity here to do something very, very special. Start with this reality. We are called, generally, we are called to be disciples. And think about what that means. Actual followers of Jesus. In whatever context we find ourselves, we are followers of Jesus. And yet I want to point this out gently. Actually, I'm very encouraged when I look around the Brotherhood today, because I see a whole lot of congregations that are moving from where I'm afraid we've spent too much time in thinking that being called as a disciple means that we take the Lord's Supper every week and that we say the right things about baptism and that we sing a cappella. Those things are important. I'm not undermining those at all. Those are really important. But that's not what the world thinks of when they think about following Jesus. And the world is desperately, desperately needing to see examples of people following Jesus. And nowhere is that more readily accepted than at that moment when people realize their own need. Ministry works when people know their need. And so, here we are today, we're talking about following Jesus. Now, let me show you a couple of passages of Scripture that lay the groundwork for this. When Jesus made his announcement, the opening of his ministry, it's in Luke chapter 4. I love this passage because it's an obvious example of him making a statement to the world as to why he had come. As was his habit, he was at synagogue on Sabbath. And as was their tradition, someone would be seated in what they called the seat of Moses. And that is that on that select day, that particular person had the honor of reading from the scrolls. And on that day, Jesus was selected to read. And he got up and he read from the book of Isaiah. And that was not an accident. It was his announcement. And this is what he said about why he had come. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. Who was he coming to? He was coming to people who were hurting. And he was demonstrating at that very moment what that really was going to mean. For the rest of you, this you're going to understand, but what color folder would you like? Everybody gets a folder. Does it matter? I like green. Think about when Jesus was having the conversation he was having in Matthew 22, when the Pharisees came and said, "What's the great commandment?" And he dropped back to his Deuteronomy answer, and he said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength." But then he didn't even hesitate. And he said, and the second is like to it, to love your neighbor as yourself. He didn't come to be religious. He came to be compassionate and to demonstrate what it was going to mean for his followers to follow after him. And as kind of a reflection on that, remember what James says about what true religion is? True religion, James doesn't say anything about worship service. True religion is caring for widows and orphans, going to the people who obviously have a need and who are hurting. And then there is that, I think, just a shouting at us statement in Matthew 25, where all the nations of the earth will be gathered together in front of him, and he will speak to them. He will separate them as a sheep separates the goats, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats, and he'll speak to them. And he talks to them about feeding those who are hungry and giving drink to those who are thirsty and clothing those who need clothing and going to those who are sick and in prison. And this is a judgment scene. I think it should be a little haunting to a whole lot of people if they feel like their fulfillment of discipleship is what takes place sitting in a pew. Personal opinion? Pews were an invention of Satan because they keep us from really seeing each other and communicating with each other. Do we have pews in our church building? Yes, we do. But several years ago, we reconfigured them so that we're in a horseshoe shaped. You know why we did it? So we'd actually sing to each other. The point being, people are important. And in the ministry of Jesus, and consequently in our discipleship in emulating Jesus, people are important. And yet nowhere is that more obviously seen than in our opportunity to minister to people who are grieving. All of us are touched by death. It's the ultimate statistic. One out of one dies. And if you're not the next one to go, then you're going to be facing it again, okay? And so death is a part of our very substance. And how we deal with death actually is at least as important as how we deal with life. That was a quote. You know who said that? Spock did in one of the Trek movies, okay? but it is true, how we deal with death, I think, is perhaps one of the greatest demonstrations of what our role is and how what our discipleship is really all about. So, I want us to take a look at what that means. What does it mean, for example? Now, I know it was meant as a comforting verse for us individually in what we experience, but it also says something about our discipleship. Psalm 23, probably the most quoted chapter in the Bible. Verse 4 says, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." As Christians, we need to walk down that valley because we need to hold other people's hands as they walk down that valley. And so we have this opportunity to deal with people. What I want to do I want to give you several layers here of us looking at this various subject. In your folder, on the right-hand side, you might just pull out all those pieces of paper. Now, don't worry, we're not going to go through all of those pieces of paper. But on the right-hand side is what we're going to talk about in this session. On the left-hand side, pardon me, it's the other way around. Left-hand side is what we're going to deal in this session. Right-hand side, we're going to deal with next session, okay? And we're going to, when we talk about how we should respond to tragedy, and I'm going to give you some really, really helpful stuff in that. But I want you to understand, here we are as disciples looking at this amazing subject of death and of grief and how we are going to react to this. You can have that, okay? I give you these handouts because there isn't any way that I can, in this amount of time, cover everything I would like to cover. And actually, we could expand this to a whole lot of other topics that I would really like to explore, how to make a good hospital visit and that sort of thing. But we just don't have time for all of that. But what I have given you is something that I hope you can take home and use. And I will be very upfront. One of the things I want to try to persuade you to do, if your congregation is not already doing a grief support group, I want to highly encourage you to do that. And you are capable of doing that. There may be some questions to ask, but what I've given you today, what I'm giving you in this packet, is exactly what we are going to do in our grief group this year. We do a grief support group every year in the city of Clinton. It so happens that one of our wonderful, faithful, evangelistic members is our funeral director, and he and I together do this grief support group every year. We've been doing it for a long time. And it has proven to be one of the most effective community outreaches that we could possibly do. But I'll get more to that in a little bit. First of all, on your purple piece of paper there, it's about ministering to those grieving. And it talks a little bit about that. But I wanted you to have the scriptural basis for this as well. There's a whole lot of scripture that deals with grief. And I've not even come close to listing all of these. Had a very, very heavy conversation yesterday at lunch with a very dear friend of mine who is grieving right now, not because of death, but because of some very sad things going on within his congregation, and it's crushing him. And he has become acquainted with Psalm 88. You familiar with that? Darkest psalm I know. Psalm 88 and Psalm 39 do not resolve themselves at the end with a happy ending. They are tearful pleas to God. What's going on here? One of the reasons I like Psalms is because they're so honest. They really express who we are. And these Psalms are expressing some of that. There is another Psalm that starts out about as bleak as it can be, and that is Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? But as you read through that, it changes tone. And where it starts as dark as it can be, it ends with hope. In our grief group, I give a handout at one point. I'll show it to you after a while. I give a handout that says 23 always follows 22. Because we deal with the bleakness of Psalm 22, and then we go into the assurance of Psalm 23. I think it ought to be a bumper sticker, really. But here is an effective message from the Psalms that there is hope, but let's be honest, there is also grief. And so I give you these passages of scripture just for your own reference. And then the next one may be a little bit of a surprising thing. Let me just say a little bit about this. I include this. Some of you are in positions that you do funerals, okay? As the church, this is one of our first encounters we have when people are grieving. We end up ministering to them at that point, and within a few days, usually within a few days of the death of that loved one, we do a funeral. I've got a lot more feelings about this than I can possibly express right here, but you know what? There's a lot of terrible funerals, because sometimes people try to do things in funerals that are just not appropriate. One of the things, and some of you may not agree with this, and you have that right, absolutely, but I don't think it's a time to preach a sermon. That funeral is about that person. And one of the main things that happens if we try to turn it into a sermon is that the people that are attending are resentful, and they don't want to even come back to our building, because how insensitive of us to be in what is in their eyes self-promoting at a time like this. It is a time of recognizing the grief of someone, and yet it's not sad. It's a wonderful opportunity. And so I've included this on how to do a great funeral. I think there are some things that need to be talked about. There are some ways to handle this that actually turn a funeral into a wonderful and even God-centered thing. If they've come to us and ask us to do the funeral, they expect some spirituality out of it. But that doesn't mean that we preach a sermon and we extend an invitation at the end. And I've seen some, and I'm sure you've seen some, that I thought that was going to happen. That's not what we're about. At that point, we are there as, here's a conduit I just read this last week. Here's a statement I read. We are conduits to the grace of God. And at that point, people need to understand the grace of God, and we are the instrument by which that will happen. And so I urge congregations, specifically preachers that are doing funerals, to do great funerals. I would encourage you, and I've also included something in here that I actually expected to add one more thing to, and I simply forgot to do it. Two pieces of paper down, an obituary for a very short life. I can't do this every funeral that I do. But I get asked to do lots of funerals because, I don't know, people like funerals that are not preachy, I guess. And so for lots of people in Clinton, not members of the church, but they ask me to do their funeral. And so, interestingly, I've done a funeral in many of the denominational church buildings in town. And it's okay, because we get to step in and demonstrate something is entirely different. But in doing that, sometimes I think it's appropriate to write a special tribute to the person. And if you are able to do that, I highly encourage it. This particular thing that I wrote was written as an obituary for a baby that lived about 2 hours. Baby was born without a brain, just had a brain stem. And you can imagine how utterly devastating that was for that family. When you do something like this, I still have members of that family come back and say something about this, because we were able to touch their lives in a very special way then. Give that opportunity all the respect that it needs to connect those people with the comforting grace of God. And so funerals are very important, and I think we need to do them right. Okay? What color is that? I don't know. Why should our congregation do a grief support group? First of all, it's because we love people. That's the starting point. Because people die. It is a constant, and we're going to be in contact with that. And then when people die, their loved ones are most open to a demonstration of compassion because they're broken at that moment. And they need somebody to come alongside them and demonstrate a loving care that comes from God. And so here's the church's opportunity to do that in a very special way. We do it because people need help getting through their grief, and they'll appreciate anyone that can help them. Understand that grief is an event in our life, and you cannot not grieve. There are efforts that people make to try to avoid it, but all they do is prolong it and delay it. And the longer you delay it, the more awkward it gets and the harder it gets to get through it. Grief is very real. We are very broken at that point. And there are certain things that we need to understand are going to happen during that period of grief. There are physical reactions. There are psychological reactions, emotional reactions. There's some very spiritual reactions that go on within us. And people who are grieving need to know that others are experiencing those things. Let me just give you a couple of examples of some things that have to be talked about. For any of you in here who have lost a loved one, did you later hear their voice? Okay, if that happens, one of the immediate reactions is we think we're going crazy. Okay, we're not. That actually happens, my guess is, maybe 50% of the time. You lose someone very close to you, and then usually, completely out of the blue, you'll be doing something at some point, and you'll hear their voice. And it is so real that you would swear that if somebody was there with you, they heard it too. It is that real. Evidently, what's happening is that our brain is wanting to recall that person. And so we hear that voice, and it's very distinctive. In one of our first sessions in our grief group, we assure people that if they've heard the voice, they're not losing their mind. And almost every time, as soon as we say that, somebody in the group will give an audible sigh of relief because they thought they were going crazy. Now, another thing that happens is that people say inappropriate things. And so either in our first or our second session, I will ask, have you had anybody say something stupid? And we share those things. And we usually end up laughing about them because sometimes people say things that are just so inappropriate that they're just beyond measure. I heard a woman one time say to a child whose mother died, well, God needed her more than you did. Well, that one wouldn't make me laugh. That's just insensitive and, pardon me, stupid. I can use that word because Jeremiah 51:17, this is an important verse for all of us to understand. Jeremiah 51:17. Now you need to read this out of the New American Standard Translation because Jeremiah says, all mankind is stupid. Okay, it answers so many questions in the world today. But people say inappropriate things, and we need to talk about that so that people cannot rest on those things and let them just eat away. And there's all sorts of things that people say that are just unfair. sometimes blaming God, sometimes just inappropriate in they're saying something to the person that's more judgmental than it is anything else. And so we talk through these things. I'm not going to go through that whole list, but I hope that you will look at that list carefully, because truly I hope that you will talk about having your congregation do a grief support group. Now, in this, I have the next piece of paper is how to do a support group. And in this, I have tried to be as helpful as possible in just putting together the nuts and bolts of how this can unfold. But then, in addition to this, I have given you, as I said, exactly what we are going to do in Clinton starting the first Monday night in October. Our grief group this year will go 8 weeks. It's every Monday night from through October and November. Start the first part of October. We end the Monday before Thanksgiving. And the reason we do it when we do it is because getting to the holidays is one of the most difficult points of people in their grief. And so we want this grief group to lead right up to that. And sorry. It's a very important thing to help people through that holiday session, so we lead right up to that moment. But on the yellow piece of paper, I just included what our schedule is, what the title of each group is all about, and then in the handouts, almost all of the rest of the handouts are the handouts that we will be giving out during the grief group. Most sessions we give out one or two, maybe three different handouts. One of the things that we do each time is we give what we call a refrigerator reminder, and that is it's a piece of paper that we encourage people to take home and put up on their refrigerator. And because it's just kind of a reminder of what we've talked about that week, so they take it home with them. 23 follows 22 is one of our refrigerator reminders. I'm not saying that you have to use these same handouts. I would encourage you to look through them. If you get to this point that you say you want to do a grief group, feel free to use these. There are some excellent, wonderful handouts that you can get off the internet. You can actually Google things like grief helps, something like that, and then images, and it will bring up all sorts of things that are maybe quotes, and there's wonderful things that people have said that are very helpful, and many of those can be used. I've chosen the ones that we're going to use this year, and actually we change them a little bit every year. But let me very quickly talk through. Wayne said we had an extra 45 minutes, right? Let me very quickly talk through my encouragement to you about doing a grief support group. You start off by doing your homework. Kind of do a little bit of reading to understand grief and some things that you might do that could be of some help. I have recently found a book that is by far the most helpful book that I have ever seen on this. My wife has been urging me for years to write a book about grief and handling that, and I never have. Had I written a book, this would have been it, okay? I think one of the reasons I like this is because he and I agree on things, and so if we agree, it must be right, okay? But the name of the book is Don't Sing Songs to a Heavy Heart. Proverbs 25:20 says this, like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on soda, is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. When we're grieving, we don't need somebody to come along and sing a song to us, or to make light of what we're experiencing. We need to to be there with them in their grief. This book talks about a lot of very detailed things that we can say or not say, things we can do and not to, in terms of helping people. I highly encourage you to find this book. I'll say more about where you can actually find that too in a few minutes. If you're going to do a grief group, it'd be really good for, now if you're finding yourself doing this all by yourself, I would encourage you to get somebody else. You don't need a committee, but you need to have a couple of other minds so that you can talk through. Not everybody has to attend the grief group. As a matter of fact, I would encourage you to not have more than maybe two of you running the grief group. Two is good because you can kind of bounce off each other and keep the conversation going when it needs to. One can be observing while the other is saying something. But if you get too many, the people that come as participating in the grief group feel like they're more of a project. And we don't want to make people a project. So pick out somebody and then you can talk through and come to the conclusion that you are going to be there to help people through their grief. And so you're going to do whatever it takes to do that. You need to decide on the number of sessions that you're going to do. We have done as few as six, and that was too few. We have done as many as nine, I think, and that's not too long. Eight or nine, I think, is about right. You're doing one a week, and that gives you a period of time that people grow close together. We put out advertisements. We put it in the local newspaper. This year we're going to do a major push on Facebook. Whatever we can do, and the word gets out. We make flyers and we put them in various places. We'll actually send a flyer to all the denominational churches in town. And we get the word out about this. As it turns out, in our grief group, over the last number of years, about 75% of the people that come to the grief group are not members of the church. And we develop a relationship with those people in that period of time that we wouldn't ever be able to develop at any other time. Now, what happens when you get to towards the end, if your group has run well, that group probably doesn't want to stop meeting. It is better to stop while they want more than to keep going when they're ready to stop. We have had some groups, I remember one group we did, we ended up with, I think there were nine people in this group, and they were all women. You're going to have more women than men. For one thing, women live longer. It's the ultimate discrimination, by the way, okay? But women are also more likely to admit that they need some help during this time. And we ended up with nine women, and they formed a little group. And for the next several years, they took trips together. They went all over the country. They would meet together and just have dinner. They just were together. And they made themselves kind of a permanent group. And it was a very positive experience. How many you have in the group really doesn't matter. If you have more than about 9, 10, you may want to put them at separate tables, something like this. You want your group to be small enough that everybody can participate in the discussion. But if it's too large, everybody can't talk. And if it's too large, a lot of people won't talk. And so you break them up into small groups. While we were still living in the city here in Oklahoma City area, we did some grief groups that were as many as 30 or 35. but we broke them up into much smaller groups, three or four, and we would present a question and they would discuss it among themselves. The important thing here is not, don't worry about all that you have to say. There's not much you have to say. What we're really concerned about is getting them to talk, because that's therapy. For them, we, in every session, we present some information, but then we present opportunities for them to discuss this. And we let people talk about these things. And talking is the great therapy. When you do a group, sit around a table, because a table you can kind of hide behind. And especially at the beginning, people need to kind of hide behind something. So you sit at a table. I suggest having coffee and other soft drinks or whatever for everybody, because people need something in their hand to start with. We make them comfortable. We give them a warm greeting. We let them know that they are cared for. We listen to everybody's story. And then we move on through the various sessions. In the information time, as you could see, there is a topic for each one. And we give handouts, like normal grief reactions on sessions 2 and 3 are just normal things that the people can experience. They may want to stop eating altogether. Or they may want to eat all the time. Or they may want to sleep all the time, or they may not sleep at all. Sometimes people have other physical reactions, very, very common for digestive problems to take over, or headaches to come, something like that. They go through some things. One of the things we encourage, actually, is if people are doing that, go talk to your doctor. Make sure nothing else is going on. But give yourself that assurance. But there's all sorts of things that go on. So people need to know about normal grief reactions. And on each one of these, we have information. There is one session that is dedicated simply to the spiritual side of this. And that is the one session that I feel a little free to preach a little bit. But by that time, I think that's like the 5th session or 6th, by that time, we've developed a relationship. They know that's going to happen. And we get to share some real spiritual thoughts. And it becomes very, very helpful. And people are receptive by that time. If we would have put that on the first session, they wouldn't have come back for the second. So we're sensitive about the way that we do all of these things. When we are sharing time together, it's very important that everyone talk. But at first, everybody's not going to want to talk. So we assure them nobody's going to be forced. But they're there because down deep, they want to say something. And so we give them permission, finally, to be able to share some ideas. In the second session today, I'll give you a set of questions that you can ask, not only for people who are going through grief, but for people that are facing other tragedies. There is a series of 9 questions that you will not believe how effective those 9 questions are in helping people resolve their pain. And so there are ways that we can help people through this. But when people tell their stories, it can be almost anything. You're going to have some people there whose loved one died after an extended illness. Or you may have somebody whose loved one just dropped dead. Not this last year, but the year before, we had a woman in our group whose husband had been murdered. Sometimes you have people in the group whose loved one committed suicide. Sometimes people are there because they lost a child. Losing a child is altogether different than losing a spouse. And that's altogether different than losing a parent. in the normal order of things, we kind of expect to lose our parents. We don't expect to lose a child. And so losing a parent, usually we're able to help people work through that a little faster. The textbooks tell us, by the way, textbooks are rarely right on this, but they tell us that if we lose a spouse, it'll be about 2 years before we're back fully into life. But it's been my experience, if somebody loses a child, it takes about 5 years. Altogether different. Sometimes you will have somebody in the group who's had a miscarriage. And there would be some who would jump on that and say, wow, they don't need to be here because that person didn't live very long. If there is a miscarriage, that needs to be treated just as fully as a loss as if that child had been with them for years. Respecting life is what this is all about. And so, anyway, I give you this. I urge you to read through this, talk through this. And as I said, I have given you lots of information here that about what you will be doing to actually conduct the group. And if you so choose to do that, then I want to make you aware of some other resources. On the very back, you have this bright orange piece of paper, okay? I have put my email on there and my telephone number in case you would run into any questions you'd like to communicate with me about. I would be very happy to talk with you about this. If your congregation is talking about doing this and you want me to come and talk to some other people about that with you, I would be very glad to do that. I am just absolutely convinced that every congregation of the Lord's Church needs to be doing a grief group because it says who we are to people. We care about them in their pain. And if we demonstrate our care for people when they're hurting, then we have opened up a line of communication that we cannot ever establish any other way. I've also included on here some other, I've done some other workshop topics along these lines. Facing critical illness. If you are told that you have a terminal illness, there's some things go on in your thinking that you really need to talk about that. And we need, as the church, we need to be ready to handle that. We need to look upon ourselves as ministering in a world of pain. You remember, well, we're almost done. Let me show you a scripture. Isaiah 53, so well known. This is talking about the suffering Savior. But verse 4 says this, "Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried." That's what Jesus did. This is the prophecy of the Messiah and what he will do for us. When he announced his arrival in his ministry, that's what he was talking about. He was here for hurting people. And so we as the body of Christ today are to be extending to people our compassionate care. There's one more thing. I have to tell you this, and then we'll take a break. Following our grief group, and we are just starting this year, but it's material that I have recently come in contact with. There is a group called Stephen Ministries. It is not a brotherhood thing, but it is solid material. I have found nothing doctrinally displeasing about the closest thing to it. This man is a part of Stephen Ministries, and the most egregious thing I have found is that he uses the word pastor a couple of times. Okay? But the truth is, not in the sense that we identify a pastor as an elder, but a pastor is a shepherd who protects his sheep. And in a real sense, we are to act as that to people who are hurting. So this book is helpful. It's available through Stephen Ministries. I highly encourage you to get this, and if you think other people in your congregation are going to be doing this, get a few copies and pass it around. I wish every person in our congregation, and I've already told our congregation this, I wish everybody in our congregation would read this, because it would make us better ministers to people who are breaking. Every one of us needs to know this kind of approach. But thing that we are starting this year is a group of four mail-outs, four booklets from the Stephen Ministries. One is to be sent out 3 weeks after the death of a loved one. Book two, 3 months after. Book three, 6 months after. And book four, 11 months after the death of that loved one. And these booklets simply help people through their grief. Now imagine this, if you're somebody who is grieving, over a period of 11 months, you receive four booklets and a personal letter in each one from us to you, expressing our ongoing concern. Make it personal, loving, gentle. What's that do for the people who receive these booklets? It keeps us in contact with them, and it establishes us as caregivers. There is no lose in this. This is a very positive thing to do. So we're going to take a break. If you want to come up and look at these materials, you're very welcome to do so. We're going to take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll jump to our second session on how the church should respond to tragedy, and we'll define that as we get to it. Any questions? I'm here.